Thanks for listening to Vermont Edition. I'm Andrea Lorien, one of the producers on the show, and what you're about to listen to has been edited for clarity and brevity. Thanks for listening.
This is Vermont Edition. I'm Michaela Lafrac. The recovery journey is different for every person who decides to walk down the path away from addiction. Oftentimes, people experiencing addiction need a variety of support, from medical attention to group therapy. The stakes are, unfortunately, incredibly high. Last year, more than 107,000 people in the United States died from drug overdoses. Today on the show, we're going to focus on the work of one local organization that helps people in recovery process trauma, build self-esteem, and sustain recovery through writing. Writers for Recovery marks its 10th anniversary of holding writers' workshops, trainings, and talks. And just a quick note to say that the content you're about to hear contains some adult themes and may not be suitable for all listeners. We are joined in the studio today by one of the organization's co-founders. Bess O'Brien is a filmmaker from the Northeast Kingdom. Her 2013 documentary, The Hungry Heart, was a catalyst for the creation of this group. Bess, welcome back to the show.
Great to be here, Michaela.
It's so exciting to have you in studio with us today. And right next to you is one of the writers in this program, Joy. Joy is also the president of the Poetry Society of Vermont and hosts poetry events all around central Vermont under the name Rabbit and Wolf. Joy, welcome.
Hi, excited to be here.
Yes, we're so happy to have both of you. And listeners, your voice is important to this conversation as well. Perhaps you are in recovery and have found a type of support that really works for you. Maybe there's a local organization just like Writers for Recovery that you've relied on through the process. Give us a call and tell us about it. 800-639-2211 is our number. You can also email vermontedition@vermontpublic.org. So, Bess, 10 years. Can you take us back to 10 years ago and tell us about the founding of this organization?
Yeah, well, as you said, I'm primarily a documentary filmmaker. I've been doing it for a long time, and I made a film about 10 years ago called The Hungry Heart. And we were touring it all over the country, actually, and it was sort of coming to an end. And I was really moved by how people telling their stories in this film really moved them forward in their recovery. And the power of storytelling and the power of expressing oneself. And so I decided that even though The Hungry Heart was sort of winding down, that I wanted to continue doing something like this. And so I met with my buddy, Gary Miller, who was a writer. And I said, Gary, let's do some writing workshops with people in recovery and just see if that works. Because all you need in a Writers for Recovery workshop is a paper and a pen. You don't need a huge film production. And so we ended up doing a Writers for Recovery workshop in St. Albans at the Recovery Center there. And it was absolutely magical, incredible. We actually, you know, had, I think there was like 25 or 30 people show up. It just worked. It was, people loved it. It was very powerful. And so from then, we just said, let's continue this. Let's start something that really has a future. And so then we moved to the Turning Point in Burlington and started a series of workshops there. And once again, they were very successful. And from there, we just started to build a program. And here we are 10 years later.
Mm. And Turning Point runs recovery centers all around the state. And you've worked with many of them.
Right. So over the last 10 years, we've worked in all of the Turning Point recovery centers. I think there's maybe 14 or 15 of them now across the state. We work in the correctional facilities. We have a fabulous program with Scrag Mountain Music called the Lullaby Project, where we work with women to write lullabies for their children. So Writers Recovery helps write the lyrics with them, and then Scrag Mountain Music writes the music, and it's just a powerful, wonderful program. We actually did a series of podcasts with Vermont Public about 5 years ago, I think before you were here, and that was in collaboration actually with our friend Erica Heilman. We do a lot of work in libraries, public spaces, treatment centers. We're doing a series of workshops right now at Valley Vista. We've done some at Sana, Brattleboro Retreat.
Sounds like you have a lot of time on your hands.
Yeah.
Really bored.
Yeah, there's plenty to do. And It's just, we're also starting to write, do a bunch of workshops with younger people. We're starting to work in high schools. And actually, we're just about to launch something called Writers for Flood Recovery. Because Gary said, oh my God, shouldn't we be going into these small towns and just offering some writing workshops for folks who are traumatized and going through a lot, to give them a space, an outlet to express themselves and talk about this stuff. So we're going to be going into probably 5 communities in the next 6 or 7 months to offer those workshops.
Wow. Wow. So you've figured out the template for how to run these workshops, yeah, the types of supports people need, the community partners, and now you're tailoring them for different needs.
Exactly. And it's just... you know, it's one of those things where you go into a workshop and it's sort of like documentary filmmaking too. You show up, you don't know the person, you're about to do an interview, sort of like you, Michaela, and you just find that once you set the space for feeling safe and listened to, that people open up, they share their lives. These writing prompts that we give people, you can only write for 7 minutes. So it's a very short period of time. So we don't want people to think too much. We just want you to hear the prompt and go with it. And that actually frees people up from getting all tied up in grammar and spelling and did I do it the right way, you know? And it's just extraordinary what happens in 7 minutes.
Yeah. Joy, can I get your thoughts there on what it's like to participate in one of these, or maybe specifically to have to write something with those types of parameters? It could be, you know, I imagine very containing, but also sometimes having some rules helps you just get started.
Yeah, I actually write better in workshop and with prompts. If I just sit down to write, it's rare that I do that, unless I just am infected with a great idea that won't let go. And what I do with the pieces I write there is use them as something to jump off with and re-edit them and massage them until there's something that I think is a finished product. But having that 7 minutes, it is pressure. But I also sometimes write in a poetry form, something traditional, just for the pressure of making the thoughts come out in a certain way.
Yeah.
And I think it really stimulates me and gets the ideas out. Sort of instinctively, you would think that wouldn't be the case, but it is. And I write in another workshop often also. And these are the two spaces where I get most of my work out. But Gary will just give us like half a sentence and be like, okay, 7 minutes, go. And it's amazing. Some people in the workshop will come out with like 3 pages of thought.
Wow.
And some people will, like, I come out with like some weird poem, and like we all go in different directions.
Yeah, and the prompts are very open-ended. You know, it's something like when I walked into the room, or I am from, or what I wanted to say, or I remember that afternoon, whatever. So it's not, I think one of the things that Writers for Recovery does that's different than like AA meetings or therapy, which is all really important. Like everybody needs as much possible things in the toolbox to get them through all this. But Writers for Recovery is sort of open-ended. We don't say, you know, when did you start using, and tell us about, you know, this. It just sort of gives you a prompt and then you just go wherever you go. And sometimes you don't even write about addiction. Sometimes you write about something else.
Right.
But we've had people in our workshops write something and literally say and then they share them. You know, we share around a circle. They'll say, oh my God, I haven't thought about this thing that happened to me for 20 years. And this prompt just took me there.
Yeah.
So it's sort of a subconscious thing. It's cool.
Some of those prompts you just listed off, Bess, just gave me like an immediate emotional response.
Yeah.
And kind of made me want to start writing. And I'm curious if our listeners have felt that way too. If you use writing as a tool, either for something like recovery or to process your emotions, perhaps you learned that skill from a teacher in your life, give us a call. Tell us about it. 800-639-2211. Joy, you have kindly agreed to share some of your poetry with us today. I'm wondering if you'd be comfortable reading one of the poems you've brought with you.
Yeah, and this is an example of something where I came from a prompt. So it's not like this is what I wrote in 7 minutes. And I don't remember what the prompts were for either of these, but I think this one's published in the next anthology.
Yes, it
a
is.
A version of it, because I am a compulsive editor. So this has probably been edited 4 times since it was printed, but which is why I rarely publish. It's called In 7 Acts. Act 1, girl interrupted, girl at the bar bumming smokes, girl wearing low-cut shirts and tight jeans for asset value, girl swirling in strange beds, girl swimming in a strange head. Act 2, still a stupid drunk slut, still making bad choices, still disappointing parents, still can't sit still, still embedded in sheetrock between 6 layers of wallpaper. Act 3, girl is fired from position of wife. Girl starts smoking again. Quits drinking and putting things in nose for 1 month, for 90 days, for the weekend, for good. Quits smoking again. Quits looking for a reason. Quits pretending to like it. Quits pretending. Act 4. Girl wants to die. Blows up marriage too. Does not die. Quits caring. Cares too much. Still does not drink, snort, or smoke. Still can't sit still but does not run. Falls down every day. Wants to just quit. Does not quit. Act 5. Heart breaks, broken heart, heart shredded, heart eaten in a stir fry, heart devoured, choked on, and spit in face. Act 6. Girl sets it all on fire, screams until face is compostable, does not drink, does not snort, does not smoke, sits down right in the middle and becomes rage. Act 7. Girl sucks on heart like a cough drop, picks away at charred skin, rages harder, differently, loves, differently, does not quit, does not die, emerges.
Hmm. Emerges. Emerges. I love that last line. Hmm.
Thank you for sharing that with us, Joy. You said it was going to be published in the next anthology. Can you tell us about the anthology you're referring
to?
Yeah,
we're on
Number six. Yeah, so Writers Recovery publishes an anthology about every 2 years of some of the best work that we produce. And we're celebrating our 10th anniversary, so this is our next publication. And it's just, so that was edited a little bit, but the most of that was written in 7 minutes. So when you think about that, it's sort of extraordinary, you know, what comes out of your head and where you go. And it's, you know, you also have people who come into the workshops who are like, I didn't like writing when I was in school. I didn't do well in English, you know, I'm scared of writing. And then somehow they sit around that table and you give them the prompt and they just start putting stuff down on a piece of paper. Mm. It's a very freeing way of writing.
Mm. Joy, do you find yourself writing frequently about addiction and recovery? Or has that changed throughout your own journey?
I vacillate between things, and sometimes I write on a certain theme until I feel like not resolved it, but that I've gotten through it a little bit more and have processed it. I do write a lot about recovery, and I write about combinations of things, of different trauma or what's happening currently. And I do find that the prompts do pull out things that are unexpected, like maybe a childhood memory that is a core memory that I didn't realize or forgotten about. And I've been working with Writers for Recovery for about 8 years. I've been sober, I'm coming up on 9 years. So since early in my recovery and early in their formation. So it's been a big, big long line of discoveries, almost a decade of it.
Have you always considered yourself a writer? Did you write as a child?
I dabbled in it a little bit, but I didn't consider myself a writer. It was just something I did sometimes. I've always had sort of a creative mind and wanted to make something. But I didn't really consider myself a writer until, I think, through the pandemic, I had a lot of focused time and really came into my skills and have been developing them seriously since then and feel I can call myself a writer now and a poet.
Yeah. I'm always very impressed by the folks who used the time of the pandemic for something constructive that didn't involve binging Netflix. Oh, kudos to you for many reasons. Bess, I feel like writing is so personal, and just getting words out on the page can be such a profound event. But in many writing workshops, there is an emphasis on editing or teaching, workshopping. How do you all in these Writers for Recovery workshops balance that, the acceptance, the, you know, just creating space to write whatever you need to write versus, yeah, the honing, the workshopping of the words?
Well, first of all, we only have one rule, and that is there's no way to do it wrong. Mm. So, you know, we're just like, whatever you write, it could be a poem, it could be an essay, it could be a list, it could be anything. Everything is good. Everything is good. And yes, it's not about criticism. It's about support. It's about when we have people read around a circle, we say to everybody, this is about positive feedback. You know, listening to what the person is reading and talking about a line that particularly moved you or you connected to or something that brought you to a certain place. So the idea is people, I think, feel more comfortable in that arena because they know, once again, it's not about spelling, grammar, redoing, editing. Many people do take that first draft back and rewrite it themselves, and that's cool. But really, the sharing part is the most powerful part. You don't have to share, but most people do. And that is where, and what is also so cool is you can have one prompt, like I walked into a room, and four different, very, very different takes on that. And that's cool. And then there's things that are similar, you know, that people can relate to. So part of the power of the workshop, I don't know what you think, Joy, is the conversation around the work with each other and supporting each other and supporting each other's story.
Yeah, I agree. I think critiquing, in my opinion, is best for like an academic setting. And any workshop I've been to in the last several years has been about positive feedback. And that is helpful. It sounds like maybe it wouldn't be helpful, but it is because I listen to what grabbed somebody and I take that. And I hold that when I'm editing something. I'm like, oh, well, that phrase, several people said they really liked that phrase. So I'm going to hold that or at least hold a kernel of that when I rewrite this. And just sharing really, it's a big deal, even when it's four people, to read it out loud and to hear your voice reading this very intimate piece. Or it might not be intimate, but just having the bravery to read. In a group like this, it does tend to be tender subjects. It's a big deal, and it's like such a gift that Bess and Gary have given us that space to do that.
I'd like to read an email we got from a listener just now. Diane writes, "When my husband died 20 years ago, a book I found very helpful was Writing as a Way of Healing. To me, it's important to write in longhand in my own journal, then later use that writing to share with others. Now, 20 years later, I have reread both my initial writing and typed versions, and I'm ready to share with my daughters for the first time. There's much I had forgotten, another good reason to write." Another book that Diane found it very helpful was When Bad Things Happen to Good People by Harold S. Kushner. And I want to add one more voice to the conversation here now. Gary Miller is the other co-founder of Writers for Recovery. He's a writer and a creative director and lives in Montpelier. Gary, welcome.
Hi, thanks for inviting me.
Yeah, we're so glad to have you on with us. I'm wondering if you could, Bess took us back at the beginning of this show to the beginning of Writers for Recovery 10 years ago. I'm wondering what you can tell us about that time and perhaps where you were in your own recovery.
When we started, I was in long-term recovery already, and Bess had invited me. You know, I was very blown away by the power of the hungry heart. Bess and I had been working together on some projects for a while, and when she invited me, I was glad to do it, but I wasn't sure. You know, would this really work? You know, would people really show up? Would people really open up and respond to these little prompts? And could we really, you know, help them? And very quickly, the power of this thing just became apparent. People responded in such a good-hearted way, in such a brave way to these prompts. And in these groups, very quickly, we formed these little tight, you know, communities around the table of people, you know, caring about each other and supporting each other and listening to each other without judging. And I just remember one night calling Bess and saying, you know, this thing has legs. Like, we need to make this. We need to grow this thing and make it happen. And I'm just very grateful. You know, a lot of organizations don't last 10 years. And I feel that we've thrived for 10 years, and I've been able to meet so many amazing people in recovery, and it's just been good for me, and I really appreciate this time.
I wonder, I'd love to hear all three of your thoughts on this question. You know, we cover the opioid crisis a lot here on Vermont Edition and at Vermont Public, and the news can be so dire. And I wonder if you all, in working on this organization and some of you in going through recovery yourself, have figured out a new way to define success when it comes to the work that you're doing with Writers for Recovery. I mean, there's no end in sight to the opioid crisis, and yet these incredible connections continue to be formed, and this good work keeps getting done in our communities. I wonder how you think about
I'm
that.
Glad,
oh, Gary, go ahead.
I'm glad you used the word connection, because I feel like that is a way that I measure success in this thing. You know, when someone shows up, when someone meets another person who's in recovery also, or who's trying, you know, a lot of, we get a range, you know, people come to our group who've been in recovery 20 years, and people come to our group literally who've been in recovery for less than 24 hours. And when you are going into recovery, it often means finding a new community, because the community you've been hanging out with is not safe for you anymore. And so to me, when someone looking to change their life can connect with another person, that's a success. And in this group, we see that all the time.
Yeah, I mean, I think that, you know, part of the challenge of being deep into addiction is that you lose yourself, who you really are. That person is still there somewhere, but it's like you're possessed, you know, and it's overwhelming. And so when you take that step into wanting to be in recovery, whether it's going to your first AA meeting or walking into a Writers for Recovery workshop, you're very brave, as Gary said. That is like one of the most important steps, to just acknowledge it and take that first step into whatever room it is to get help. But I think also what Writers for Recovery does that's very unique is that it helps you get to that lost person through the work of creativity and the arts. The arts are and have always been so important to expression, to sharing, to empathy, to understanding, and it's a different way to tell your story than just saying, I am an alcoholic and this is my, you know, this is what I did today. It's more ephemeral. It's more emotional. And so it's just powerful to see people. And people do recover. Yes, it's very hard because we see a lot of devastation around us, but people are recovering every day. People are taking steps to change their lives. And this can happen, and we need to believe that.
Thank you. And Joy, what are your thoughts there on that redefining of success?
I think, well, for me, my main vice, so to speak, was alcohol. And for me, it was having I don't know if strength's the right word, but the ability to say that I had a problem, that it was like really hard for me, that I was struggling, and many people around me not recognizing that and not disbelieving, but saying like, oh, do you really need to go to rehab, or do you just need a break and you just need to moderate? And having a really hard time communicating that moderation wasn't something that was going to work for me. And just pushing back on people to recognize that I had a problem. And success, I think, is, finding your identity and releasing that identity of surrounding yourself with people that are using or that are enabling your use. I surrounded myself with people that drank as hard as me so that none of us would tell each other to stop doing it, you know? So I couldn't be around. Some people I couldn't be around for just a period of time, and some people I had to let go of. So having the strength to do that, and then just standing in what is actually you, like, yes, I have a drinking problem and I no longer do. Also, having the ability to fail and come back up and find a community that's able to catch you and lift you back up. And this is one of those communities. For some people, it's AA. For some people, it's, you know, there's countless different ways to get sober. And for me, it was a combination in the beginning. And I don't know. Now I just have my community that's all over the place and different people. But yeah, I think it's really important to have that connection to help you.
Yeah. Gary, what does it take to keep workshops like these going, to keep an organization like this working?
I think one critical thing that we do is we create a really safe space where people can be comfortable. They know they won't be judged. They know that the group wants what they want, which is to pursue a life that's different from the one that they've been living. And incidentally, we also welcome all sorts of people in recovery, as I often say, from life. You know, we don't ask, are you, do you have a substance problem? You know, we get all sorts of different people, people with mental health issues, people with eating disorders, all these kinds of things that people need help with. But I think what we really do well and what's kept us going is just creating a super safe and supportive space. And making it so, you know, when you create that, people will come back.
Mm. Bess, what do you think will keep this type of work moving forward for another decade?
Well, I think we're getting, you know, if you've made it for 10 years, you have a lot of connections around the state in a small state like Vermont, and it's clear that, you know, people want us to continue to come back, which is always good. So, you know, I think what we're looking at over the next 5 years, for instance, in a 5-year plan, is other places we can go to focus on different kinds of recovery. So like I mentioned, flood recovery. I mentioned working with young people. Somebody said the other day, you should be going into nursing homes and doing writing workshops with elderly people. I think any place that people feel alone, disconnected, I think that's, you know, a sense of I don't have any place to tell my story or talk to people about who I am. I mean, people ask me this a lot about my films. They're like, how did you get those people to tell those stories? And I often say, well, it's because we never ask those people to tell their stories. You know, if you actually sit down with somebody and make them feel comfortable and listen really closely, most people want to tell you about their lives, you know? And so it's just a matter of letting people, giving people the space and the safety and the vulnerability to write something down that maybe is subconscious. Because part of writing also is, you know, you're looking at the paper and your hand is moving, your pen is moving. It's almost subconscious. It's a little bit different than just talking. You know, and so things get put on the page that maybe you don't even know what it is until you read it. Mm. So, yeah, I mean, we're looking to branch out. We're looking to continue to strengthen the organization and to continue to work with all the recovery centers and the correctional facilities. We work a lot in the correctional facilities. And I could just tell you, when I do a workshop at the Women's Correctional Facility, you know, it's like these women are in the desert and we are the water. I mean, they are just so grateful that we are there and they just love it. And it feels wonderful to run workshops like this because you as the workshop leader also are getting a lot out of it. I'm sure Gary would agree with that. Like so many times I leave these workshops and I feel like renewed and I feel like more powerful than when I walked into the workshop. Yeah. So, you know, it's reciprocal. It's great.
Gary, does that resonate with you?
It absolutely does. Yeah. I so often come out of a workshop and I just feel, you know, like it's so important in my life to be with these people, to hear these stories. It's just a super important thing. So yeah, I totally agree with that.
Joy, you have brought another poem with you. I wonder if you'd feel comfortable sharing that now.
Sure. I wonder if Beth can identify the prompt. I'm not sure I can, but it might be like a little morsel buried in there.
Because the other thing is when we give the prompt, sometimes I say, Gary and I say, well, it could be the first line of the piece, could be the last line of the piece, could be in the middle of the piece, or you could just not even use it. Mm-hmm. So who knows?
Who knows what happened here?
It's a kernel of whatever we gave you. Yes.
It's called Psalm of the Summer. I am the belly of a cactus, sharp spine with edges of baby blue, leftover shards from when I was a little bird, shell-shocked into fixations, the door to reason blocked so efficiently that I'll forget where I am and wake up in the shower, cleaning off the sandpaper velvet of beard burn on my inner thighs, left to remind me that I am good in the worst way. But I can't push my own head underwater to drown anymore because I promised 7.5 years ago I would stop doing the bad things that make me do the bad things. So how am I supposed to stay out of the cave that I learned to carve into my ribs when I was 14, when my vertebrae slide back and forth and back and forth, and the fossils chant the hymn that I want to sing because I know all the words. Oh, heart, I know all of them.
So gorgeous. And of course, in Writer's Recovery, I'd be like, read it again. Mm-hmm. And then we talk about a particular line, or it'd be like, my God, talk a little bit. What is that line there? What did that bring back to you? You know, can you tell me more about who you're talking about or whatever? You know, it's cool because you hear a poem and you have a chance to break it down or to ask specifics about a moment or a line or a word. Mm-hmm. It's fun. It's really powerful. Mm.
Thank you so much for sharing that with us. And you can see, I mean, just in the physical appearance of your poem on the page in front of me, that there's been care and work that's gone into this, that you have reworked again and again and again. And yeah, polished that stone. It's beautiful.
Thank you.
Joy, do you see writing being a part of your life long into the future? What
Absolutely.
Role does it hold?
Yeah, absolutely. And I'm on both sides of it as well. I'm working to create spaces in a different way, safe spaces for people to develop and have their voices heard. And for me, it's so important. And I don't know if this is true for Gary and Bess, but what I do is create spaces that I want for myself or that I wish I had had early on. Mm. And I think this is Writers for Recovery is just one of those places. And I process through my writing things I can't process through talking or through just sitting by myself or doing anything else. Writing pen to paper is really important for me. I'll type it up later, and that will do a different kind of processing, but there's something visceral about putting a pen down on a new piece of paper. I think it's incredibly important for me, for my development and my growth and my processing, and I'm not going to let it go anytime soon.
Gary, I'd love to hear your thoughts there before we have to close this part of our conversation. What Joy just said about creating spaces that she would like for herself or wants to be a part of. I'm curious for you, having been in recovery for nearly 3 decades now, was there a space like this for you 30 years ago, 27 years ago, or did you have to find this type of space for yourself or create it?
My recovery was very non-traditional in that I did not do a group thing, to get away from the drugs and alcohol when I did. So, but I will say one thing about this idea of a different space. Like, I couldn't have imagined this space. I went to, grad school, and I spent a lot of time in traditional workshops where it's all about what you did wrong, mm-hmm. Let's hear your story. Let's tear it apart. Let's tell you everything you did wrong. And I think it's just like I was so focused on that way of looking at writing that this was a really gift to me, was really a gift to me to see that you don't have to go to that space. And, in addition, we're not a traditional writing workshop, but people who come to our workshops, Joy included, they hone their craft in there by hearing what they did right and also what other people did right. And so that's a space I couldn't have imagined. And all the other stuff that goes with it, all the emotional processing and and community building. So I guess that's my answer.
And Bess, you have an event coming up. Can you tell us about it?
So doggone it. We're 10 years old and we're going to have a birthday party. So we're inviting everybody. It's this Saturday, October 19th, 7 o'clock, the Old Labor Hall in Barrie, Vermont. Free. And, you know, if you want to support people in recovery, if you are in recovery, if you just want to come and have a fun night listening to great poetry and also dancing to the band Bent Nails, which is going to be a blast. We also have a special guest, Bianca Stone, who's our poet laureate, who's just an incredible, talented, and amazing woman. She's going to be there. So we really invite everyone to come and enjoy the night and celebrate. And if you want to learn more about Writers for Recovery, come. If you just want to come and dance, if you want to have some cake, if you're hungry, just come.
That's the important news.
Cake.
That was my big question.
I should also note here that Vermont Public is a sponsor of the event on Saturday for transparency's sake. Well, I think, unfortunately, that is all the time we have. I thank you all three so much for sharing your stories with us. Bess O'Brien, Gary Miller, and Joy, thank you for your time.
Thank you for having me.
Thank you.
Thanks, Michaela.
Take care.